Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here with a wonderful actress, and you've known her for so many different shows. Knots Landing, of course, but General Hospital, she did a wonderful job. Hilton Head Island, Melrose Place, Carol of the Bells, I saw her in recently, and she's just a wonderful, as always. Donna Mills is here, and she also produces, along with Larry Gelman, some of the best wine that you will ever taste in your life. It is wonderful, and I kid you not, ever since I had Larry Gelman on a couple years back, I've been pushing this wine, and everybody I've recommended it to absolutely loves it. Mandeville Vineyards is part of Donna Mills' life, and it is an award-winning wine, and she is just a wonderful actress and winemaker. Donna Mills, how are you?
Thank you. What a wonderful introduction, my goodness.
Well, the wine, how much of your life is into the wine? I mean, everybody loves this product. Everybody loves this. Is it half of your time goes into it, a quarter of your time, all of your, I mean, how much of your life goes into the wine?
Well, a lot of it. And I have to say, during this time, during this pandemic, it has been a godsend for us because, you know, it's right here on the property. So we can go up to the vineyard, or the hill where the vineyard is, and work in the vineyard like every day. And there's always something to do in a vineyard. There's weeding, God knows there's weeding, God. There's, fertilizing, there's clipping, there's tucking, there's all these different things that you have to do. So it's been really wonderful to have that to do and to get your head out of all the horribleness that's going on and just get out in nature and work in the dirt. And it's been, and we give the vines a lot of love that way, which is, I think, one of the reasons the wine turns out so good.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons you get rave reviews on the wine. It is just internationally raved upon. And for good reason. You guys know what you're doing, and you've been doing it now for a while. And I always think, and again, I know there's a lot of work, and you said there's always weeding and there's always things, but I always think of a vineyard as being such a peaceful place, and almost a spiritual place that you get to walk around at night and everything. And I don't want to minimize the amount of work that's involved, but it's got to be therapeutic in a way. To just be in that setting and to be able to just look out there and realize you're growing something that's being produced. I don't know. I mean, am I overstating that?
No, not at all. You're very right on. It's exactly the way it feels. It feels very calming. We go up the hill to the vineyard. You have to go up, I don't know how many feet, a lot of steps. And, it's like you've entered another dimension, kind of.
Yeah.
You feel like you're in a different country or a different place. It's so calming and so wonderful that it takes up a lot of our time, but it's something that we're so happy to be able to do and so grateful that it has turned out so well that the wine is an award-winning wine.
Yeah, and again, raved upon. And I kid you not, ever since I spoke to Larry, I checked out the wine. And I'm not a big wine drinker, but my friends are. And it's all we get. It's all we get them now. And I got a friend, Bill, who loves the wine. That's all he gets is your bottles, and just that's terrific, and it's nice when you could recommend something to somebody and it sticks for years, and thank you for that. Donna Mills is our very special guest. If you're just joining us or if you're just turning on your radios, Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, wonderful actress and winemaker, Donna Mills.
And thank you.
Does it feel like 40 years? I mean, think about that, 40 years since Knots Landing. 40 years.
It feels so bizarre to me because it doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like it was, maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It just doesn't doesn't feel that long. That's 40 years since it went on the air. And that was in 1980. So I was on it for 9 years. So, you know, it's about, you know, 39 years or 29 years since I left it. So, the strange thing is when, you know, they wanted to do all this, you know, celebration of the 40th anniversary of Knox, it was really easy because Michelle and Joan and I have stayed friends all these years. And, you know, so we got to do a lot of shows together and a lot of interviews together and everything. And it's been really, really fun to be in contact with them, you know, a lot. And working together again. We were even talking about doing a tour of this little thing that we do called An Evening With.
Yeah.
And they were just setting it up in Europe and everything like that when the pandemic hit. So obviously that got canceled for a while, but I think we will do it eventually.
You know, you mentioned 9 years. I'm just looking at your IMDb real quick on Knott's Landing. You did 236 episodes. Can you imagine walking in on your first episode and realizing I'm going to do this 235 more times? I mean, it's what a run. What a great gig. And it's something that people loved and are loyal to. I mean, did you think for a second that there's a chance that this would go 100 episodes or 200 episodes?
No. You know, when I first went on, I didn't, you know, the show was sort of successful in that first year, not tremendously, and because it wasn't serialized at first. It was like an individual episode each week, and I knew that it needed to be serialized to, you know, get people to come back each week, you know, with a cliffhanger and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And once they started doing that, I really did see the possibilities and how, because we had wonderful writers, and I knew that if they could do the cliffhanger thing and keep those stories as rich as they were, then we had something really good going. And it turned out that it was. And the amazing thing right now is that after 40 years, the fans are still true and loyal. They love the show. They remember more shows that we did than I remember, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I mean, it is a loyal group, and I mean, it really is loyal.
Yeah.
I have friends and family who just adore you, and you know, they know all your other work too. But it's really the love affair started with Knott's Landing, and you know,
I'm very grateful to have had a character like Abby to play for that amount of time. You know, actors, you know, you can do a million different things, but when you have one character that you really like and you really have the time to hone it and make it really good and everything, and that was a wonderful thing to be able to do, and I will always be grateful for that.
You know, if you took Knott's Landing out, it leaves a big hole, but you still have a wonderful career prior and after this. You know, you've put together a really wonderful career, and Knott's Landing is just almost like a cherry on the cake of what was going well. What was going through your mind prior to Knott's Landing? Were you thinking this is a successful run that you've had? Because you had all the top shows. You were doing one-offs here and a couple of shows here and there. But you were doing a lot of work, and you were getting a tremendous amount of attention, and people loved you and the roles you did. But were you feeling like it was like everything was going well before Knott's Landing, and Knott's Landing was just kind of a cherry on the cake, or was Knott's Landing a real departure mentally, emotionally for you?
Well, it really was a departure emotionally and mentally, because as much as I'd worked before Knott's, and I'd done a lot of movies for television, a lot of episodic shows and all that kind of stuff, when you do a series like that, that's what makes you a household name. That's what makes you a quote-unquote star. And so all the other work that I didn't give me what Knott's gave me, which was a visibility that was enormous. Because you have to remember, back then, there were basically only three networks. And our show would get an audience of 60 million viewers.
Amazing.
Nobody gets that these days.
No. That's like,
but we would get that every week. So there were a lot of people watching. There were a lot of people that were fans of the show. And it was a huge success at the time. So that was the thing. And before I got Knott's, I was looking for that role. I was looking for the thing that I could make my career blossom on. And I was lucky enough to find it.
When did you realize that was the role? How soon into it?
Probably after the first year. Because when I went on, I loved the way they introduced the character. I loved, everything that they were doing. But I really began to see how good the writers were, how good the production staff was. And I really, after about the first year, I really saw what a quality show it was. And the strange thing is, it didn't, at the time, I mean, it was a huge hit and everything, but it didn't get some of the attention that I think it deserved, because it wasn't all about rich people or, powerful people. There were characters in it that were much more down to earth and much realer. But it's one of the things that I think has kept it in people's minds, because they identified with the characters.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that identified with, you use the term identify, but I think there's a lot of fans that identified with Knott's Landing who couldn't who couldn't identify with JR and the powerful people from Dallas and all of that.
Right.
On Knott's Landing, it was different. There was a little more direct, empathy or sympathy with some of the characters, because they could relate to them. And it's just a much, much different situation. Let me remind folks that are just tuning in or turning on their radios a little late. The wonderful Donna Mills is our very special guest. And we're talking about Knott's Landing, of course, 40-year anniversary, which is just shocking. But what a wonderful career she's put together. And everyone's got to get Mandeville Vineyards products only. Only get this from now on, wine-wise. And they've put together a wonderful, wonderful collection of wines. What a wonderful thing to do. But Mandeville Vineyards is the place to shop for and look for. And she spends a lot of her time, a tremendous amount of time there, as does Larry Gelman. And boy, he loves his wine too. You guys love it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you absolutely you love producing this. It sounds like it from just listening to my short conversation with you so far, and with Larry in the past. It sounds like it's a labor of love.
It is, very much so. As a matter of fact, he's up there today in the vineyard. Year before last, we had a really bad thing happen, in that it got really, really, really hot for a couple of days and burned all the grapes, and we lost the entire crop.
Wow.
So what he did last year was he invented a shade system to protect the grapes if that should happen again, and it might, you don't know. So he's up there today kind of finishing off that, if we're going to see, like with the Farmer's Almanac or something, it's going to be really hot, then we just go up there and we pull these shade cloths across and keep the grapes from getting burned. So, it's always something. He's always thinking of something. He loves to, like, invent these things. I told him he should patent it, but I guess that's too hard to do.
Or maybe too late. Everybody knows he's done it now, and all the other vineyards are doing it as well. I mean, you never know. But still, you should patent it anyway. And what the hell? What's the downside of patenting it? And that sounds like a great idea. Let me jump back to acting for a moment here. And again, it's something that you did very well. But out of the box, when you're just coming into your own and you're getting roles, who are people comparing you to? Were they saying Donna Mills might be the next blank, or maybe even trying to kind of gear you towards that, or steer you into a certain type of persona, or you know, you're going to be the next blank? Who was that blank?
Boy, I don't know. All I do know is, though, when I started to get, you know, really popular and stuff like that, I had a publicist at the time, and she said to me, "We don't want you just to be the next sexy blonde.
Right.
You know, we want you to be more than that. We want your persona to be more important than that." So, you know, and I think people would have, you know, put me in that category, just, you know, sexy blonde, you know, and I really, acting is, for me, my lifeblood. So that's what I was interested in. I was interested in the art of acting, the craft. And hopefully, you know, I overcame that, because, you know, I've done a lot, it's one of the reasons I produced a lot of films too, because there were, you know, subjects that I wanted to investigate, and so I ended up just producing the films that I wanted to do.
Yeah, well, listen, I think mission accomplished. I don't think anyone just thinks of you as a sexy blonde. They think you as a sexy blonde who could really act, and you've always had that reputation. So Donna Mills, once again, is our very special guest. She is the voice that you're hearing. And again, Frank McKay here with Donna Mills. Let me ask you this. You mentioned when you began to get popular. Do you remember when you kind of lost your anonymity, and when you could no longer go into a store yourself without, you know, somebody coming up to you at all times? Or do you remember when that happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, because I used to live near Beverly Hills. And so, you know, I would go into Beverly Hills to shop or whatever, not just at the couture stores, but there were grocery stores and stuff there. And then I began to realize that I couldn't go there anymore, because if I was walking down the street and one of those tour buses let out and the people saw me, I was, you know, I had to run. Yeah, I was very aware of when that started, and the kind of, you know, what it costs you. You can't go just anywhere. You can't, you know, you have to be a little more careful. I also, you know, got some stalkers and stuff like that during that time, and that was not fun. That was not good at all. But it's, you know, it's all part of what comes with being a well-known person.
You know, you mentioned the other ladies, Michelle, and you were talking about the cast, and that whole cast got very hot and very, you know, very popular as the show got big. Can you imagine life now and with a show that has, as you mentioned, 50, 60 million people watching it, and simply because there were three networks and everything? Could you imagine it nowadays with everyone owning a camera on their phone and owning a video, and the paparazzi being what they are now? Could you imagine having that kind of notoriety at this moment in time?
No. You know, and it was such a different time in terms of the fans then, too. I mean, I think I always appreciated the fans so much, but you didn't interact with the fans back then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The fans were kept at a distance. They weren't let into your life. You didn't send them, like on Instagram, pictures of your life every day.
Yeah.
It was just, no one would have ever thought of doing that at that time. So it's much more, the public is much more invasive into a celebrity's life these days than they were back then. And it's been very hard for people of my ilk and my age, I think, to accept and to deal with being so sharing with the fans these days. You know, I have an Instagram account and a Twitter account, which I never use, but and I love doing it. I love, but it's very different. And when it started, when I first started to do Instagram, I really didn't want to do it. My daughter said, "You have to, Mom. You have to. It's what you do these days." Okay. And now, you know, I like it, but I'm still not one of those people that, you know, plasters every private thing in their life on their Instagram.
Yeah, well, privacy is a premium. And again, the reality, and again, Joan Van Ark, you know, has experienced this, and so many others that were going through the exact same thing you were going through. Just imagine, 50, 60 million people were watching Happy Days or your show or whatever, certain episodes. I mean, the Super Bowl is 100 million, and it's, you know, people watching it, and it's an unheard of number, and they get it every year. But it's the only thing that gets that. And all due respect to, you know, Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show, his Tonight Show is so much different than Johnny Carson's Tonight Show when there was only three networks. And if you went on The Tonight Show as a comedian, for example, and Johnny Carson was the host, you could do one appearance and it could set up your whole career. With Jimmy Fallon, again, he's terrific and the show is terrific. There's 500 channels, so there's a lot of competition. But what you guys were going through and what you gals were going through was a completely a different phenomenon than we can understand today. Again, Donna Mills is our very special guest. Mandeville Vineyards is a must to look up. Go to their website. And if you're just rejoining us or if you walked away for a second, let me remind you, you're listening to Frank McKay at Breaking It Down, but much more importantly, wonderful actress. And they're on their 40th anniversary, and we have her for a couple moments longer. Knots Landing is the show we're talking about, and Donna Mills is wonderful actress from that. Played a bad girl. I think a lot of people would consider a bad girl, and you did it very well. And Donna Mills, again, is our very special guest. But address that if you would. I mean, it is much different than what they have to deal with today with fame, because there's only that certain few that are being seen by that many people on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, however you want to look at it. But there's not many people that are being seen by 50 or 60 million people.
No. I mean, when we, you know, really think about it and think about how many people watched us each week, it was phenomenal. It really, really was. And I am really grateful that my career peaked, or whatever you want to call it, then, because it was a wonderful time. And the industry really took care of its people in the business, you know, because I think that because it was more concentrated, because it was more, there wasn't so many different stations that the networks took care of their people. And it was a wonderful time to be in the business.
Yeah. Again, it's the amount of stations and the amount of focus that's on you. And again, I can imagine what life would have been like that for someone like you and someone like Joan and you know, all the others with people around that are their own paparazzi and just taking pictures and so forth. Yeah, I get it. And I get not wanting to give up your privacy on all the social media and your daughter says it and so forth. You know, again, you're from a different time period, and actually, if you think about it, you've experienced a lot of different changes in the medium on TV, and again, now when you're being seen on different shows, there are stations or there are over the top platforms like Hulu and Amazon that we wouldn't have dreamt of back then. Did you think it would go on this long? Did you think that this is how life would go as an actress or an actor and a creator of content? Did you have any idea that any of this was going to be like this?
No, I mean, back then, who would have ever thought, first of all, that we would all be walking around with a phone in our face all the time? All the time. I mean, I remember when I got my first mobile phone, and it was huge, and it had a big box that you had to put in the car, but I thought I was so cool that I had one of those. And I would take it to the set, and I would sit in my car and, you know, talk on it. But it was a whole different kind of thing then, and just to be able to be in that communication seemed amazing. Never in a million years would you think that you're going to be able to watch shows on a phone. You know, all this streaming, and now all the networks doing streaming, I don't know where it goes to. The acceleration of what's happening has been so great, and it keeps accelerating faster and faster that you don't know, I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what it's going to be like. It's somewhat dismaying that they're now doing 10-minute shows.
Yeah, that's
it's like,
yeah,
really? People's attention span is that short? God.
Yeah, you're coming from where you did almost a mini movie. Every week, you're putting out a mini movie, like The Sopranos. You know, they put out a mini movie constantly, and you guys were doing that.
Yeah.
Now people are doing 10-minute movies, and I'll tell you, if people, you know, watch it and people like it, then kudos to whoever's creating it. They're changing with the times. You know, Quibi. If you look at what they're doing with Quibi, everything is 10 minutes, and it's for commuters and it's on phones. So they're reacting to all of that. Just to switch gears for a second, is there anything that, because you were so tied into Knott's Landing for that amount of time, 9 years, is there anything that you missed out on that you were offered and maybe you had to turn it down because it was conflicting with the schedule, or for whatever reason you just looked away?
Yeah, most of the stuff I got to do that I wanted to do, although it was difficult because we did 22 shows a year. Nobody does that anymore either.
No.
And some years we did 30 shows because they had found out that it didn't do well in reruns during the summer, so they wanted to keep it on first run during the summer. So we did 30 shows a year. That was tough. That meant we only got about 2 weeks vacation, so that wasn't even enough time to, you know, do another movie or anything. But for the times we were doing 22 shows a year, I had, you know, a couple of months off, and I would always do a movie for television or a miniseries or something like that. I do remember once, though, when we were doing the 30 shows a year, I was offered a miniseries, and I don't remember what it was. All I remember was it was a costume drama, and I really wanted to do it, and I couldn't because they couldn't work out the dates. They couldn't work out the time. And that was disappointing because I love costume drama and I really wanted to do it.
Yeah, well,
but most of the time, you know, I filled the time in between when we were shooting Knott's with other things, which, and, you know, during that time you were doing a million photo shoots and everything else and traveling around. I did a lot of, you probably remember from back then, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I did a lot of those, so I was, and that was fabulous. I traveled all over the world with them, so that was really wonderful.
It was actually, yeah, I was going to ask you about Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Again, Donna Mills is our very special guest, and you did a lot of work with them. It was really a predecessor to a lot of what came afterwards, and I don't think that show gets the credit for paving the way as much as it should, because there really was nothing like that prior to Lifestyles and the Rich and Famous. Now we have a lot of it, and a lot of the reality shows that we see are basically doing Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous just in a different form.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, a unique and wonderful idea at the time, and I actually did the pilot for it. They called me, and I was in Italy for 3 weeks shooting the pilot. And then, you know, literally went all over the world, to Japan, to Tahiti, to France, Italy, Yugoslavia, which it was then, everywhere. And it was it was wonderful. But now, you know, now we have the Discovery Channel. Now we have the National Geographic Channel. Now we have all these other things, which kind of, you know, they take you to different places too. So, you know, this idea, you know, probably wouldn't fly today, although I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, what a gig. You just mentioned all of those places, and everyone listening just got very jealous. Just imagine, you're doing your thing in all those different places, and you're traveling around. Again, Donna Mills here with me, Frank McKay. Is there anything on your list? Is there a bucket list that you have? Is there anything that you haven't done that you would like to yet?
Oh, God, so much. Yeah. I mean, I like to work. So I just want to do more films, more series, more anything. And what I've been doing mostly lately are little independent features. I did 5 of them last year.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting and fun and different than the big network, you know, to show where there's a lot of money being spent in that. These are little independent features that are doing it on a dime, you know, and it's really fun to see people's passion and commitment to these little films. It's been a rewarding time for me.
That's what I mean. You've really been a witness to history in so many ways. You've watched the industry change with the times, and that's a big part of it too. I noticed that you've done a lot of independent films, and I think it's cool that you're doing that. And I think that that it's the way of the future in many ways. And if people used to complain all the time, or women would complain that at a certain point they not complain, they would make a statement that there's no roles for me anymore. There's, you know, I don't fit into this role or I don't fit into that role. And I have had a lot of folks on this show that probably are friends of yours, and they've said that to me, on and off mic. But if you think about it, they're all roles, but you have to be creative in getting them. You have to find these creative folks. And some of these filmmakers, you have an opportunity to launch them too, to put a Donna Mills, to put someone who's got that kind of name and that kind of experience into an independent film gives it credibility. And if you think about it, you have a lot of power in a sense to bring attention to folks that are in need of recognition.
Yeah. And, you know, in the business now, there are less roles for someone who's older. You know, there are a lot more roles for the 20s, for women in particular, in their 20s and 30s, than there are for roles in their 60s or 70s. So, you know, the work the opportunities go down. I've just been lucky that I've been sought after from these independents, and, it's been really nice. Unfortunately, everything is shut down now with the pandemic, and it's really sad. It's really sad for all the different crafts and arts in the filmmaking business. You know, the hairdressers and the makeup artists and the set designers and the gaffers and, you know, all of them. You know, there's nothing for them to do right now. So it's a tough time in the industry.
Yeah, well, I say it all the time. And if you're a singer or if you're a musician, you could still write and you could still record. If you're an actor, actress, or filmmaker, you during this time, you can't hug, you can't kiss, you can't shake hands, you can't fight, you can't huddle together. Very few scenes that you could really shoot, you know, with having any kind of, forget about having any kind of crew there, you know, I mean, everybody would have to be in masks. So it's really it's a unique period of time for this part of the business. And it's just amazing. How did you handle it immediately? Did you take it in stride? Was it upsetting for you in a sense that that you couldn't do what you love to do? Or did you take it as a, you know, a little bit of a break, a little bit? And obviously everybody's worried about those being sick, and you know, our thoughts go out to them first and foremost. But when it comes time to career-wise, did it hit you hard that you couldn't do this, or did you just kind of go with the flow?
Well, I kind of just went with the flow because there was nothing else to do. You know, you couldn't fight it. And quite honestly, at the very beginning of this, I was terrified. You know, I was just terrified that I would get it, that someone in my family would get it. I was terrified for everyone, and still am to a great extent. You know, I'm not going out there without a mask.
No way.
And I feel that the people that do are being so selfish.
No doubt about it. Just no doubt. It's terrible what they're doing.
Yeah. How hard is it to wear a mask? It's just not hard. You know, and if it's going to save somebody else or save you, do it. It's easy, you know. Until we can, you know, get it contained or get a vaccine or whatever, it's not a hard thing to do. So, and even, you know, people, if they're going to open up shops and open up all kinds of businesses, if people wear masks, it's going to stay contained. It's not going to, you know, flare up again. So I'm just appalled at people not doing it.
Yeah, well, listen, I would say amen to that. No question, it's the easiest thing in the world to do is just put on a mask, just deal with it. I don't think you look cool without a mask. I don't think you look tough. I don't think you look independent. I think you look like you don't care about anybody but yourself. It's not about you staying healthy and being cavalier about you're getting people sick. If you have it, and especially if you're not wearing a mask, more likely have it than I have it. I'm staying as far away from everybody as possible. My family is doing the same, and we're dealing with it. We're playing by the rules. We're going out there with masks and only masks and gloves. I mean, I look like a spaceman when I don't care. There's no way I want to take a chance on giving somebody else anything that I could possibly have. And so anybody out there without a mask, if you're listening, put a mask on. It's an easy thing to do. It's just, you know, it's not for you. It's for everybody else.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I would not, I will, you know, right now, the only things that I really go out for are like to go to the grocery store, you know, once in a while and stuff like that. And I have not run into yet unmasked people. The grocery stores that I go to, everyone has on a mask. If I saw someone without one, I would head the other way. Yeah. I'm sorry, but I don't want to be around anybody that doesn't have one.
Well, you're also in an area there that's really beautiful, and I think a lot of people up there care about the environment and care about others. And care,
very much so.
You live in you're fortunate, and by choice too. You and Larry have chosen a wonderful place to live and a wonderful place to grow wonderful grapes, and terrific wine comes from those grapes, and that's Mandeville Vineyards. I want to thank you very much for being here. Can you give us a website, a social media site, and anything else you'd like to add, but certainly a website for Mandeville?
Yeah, it's mandevillevineyards.com. Very easy.
Yeah. And
that's Mandevillele vineyards.com. Yeah.
And you mentioned social media, and you don't get too heavily involved. And your daughter mentioned it. I don't know if you said to her, "Hey, if you want me to do social media, you do it for me." But is somebody manning it for you? Are you kind of following it a little bit?
Oh yeah, I mean, I do it. I post all the time. She does it for me sometimes because, gee, I'm not too good technically with it. But yeah, and it's Z Donna Mills, on Instagram.
Listen, congratulations.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, I just I like Instagram in that when you do it, you can kind of then look back and see, you know, what you've done in the last year and what it's nice. And I have found the fans on Instagram to be really lovely and, you know, not mean or anything like that. So I'm very grateful. Although I know my daughter, if anything mean comes in, she takes it off, so I don't see it.
I stay off of Twitter because I think it gets nasty. Twitter gets a little nastier than Instagram for some reason. I just haven't been on it in a while. I just can't take all the hate, you know, regardless of who they're hating. I don't like all of that. But Donna Mills, congratulations on an amazing career, still going strong, and congratulations to both you and Larry for producing really the best wine around, if you ask me. And it's just terrific. 40th anniversary of Knott's Landing is upon us and has just passed, and it's unbelievable. But congratulations on everything, and thanks very much for being here.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure. You were really fun to talk to.
Same here. Donna Mills, everyone. Wonderful actress and winemaker. MandevilleVineyards.com is where you should go. And I'll tell you, I'm not a wine drinker, but I'm hooked on Mandeville. And ever since I spoke to Larry a few years ago, I mentioned it to somebody who loves wine, and they said it's the best. And then I started giving it as gifts. And every time I give a gift, it's from Mandeville Vineyards. And I always get rave reviews. It is absolutely terrific. Everyone's got to follow my lead on this. It's absolutely terrific. But Donna Mills is just a treasure. And she is she's been around a long time for a young gal, 40 years. 40 years for Knott's Landing, and she was a bad girl on there, but she what a terrific character she played and just owned it. Absolutely terrific. Donna Mills has been our very special guest. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.